This week, we're talking to a guy that I've wanted to talk to for months, and I finally found the excuse at last Sunday's Tony Awards when they relegated the award for best play to the middle of the broadcast and stunk up the place with so many musicals that all the plays got drowned out. And it revived the conversation about how do you film straight plays for broadcast in a way that makes them look interesting and not lifeless and dead. So today I'm talking to Scott Silberstein, the co-founder and executive director of HMS Media in Chicago, who specializes in filming theater for electronic media and for broadcast. So I figured, Scott, you are the perfect person to talk to about this. Please tell me I'm right.
You are so right.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or tablet or phone. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast number 445, Filming Live Theater. Scott Silberstein is the Emmy-winning founder and executive producer of HMS Media, a leader in video production for live entertainment and creator of online content and broadcast documentaries. I was thrilled that Scott was willing to talk to me this week, and he started by explaining a little bit about HMS Media's organizational philosophy.
HMS is essentially a creative ensemble that works very much the way a theatrical ensemble does, as opposed to your more traditional production company. I often only half joke that we were a production company that was raised by wolves. We came up with the theater, dance, and music worlds. And so for us, it's always been a question of how do we get best organized around what's happening up on stage and honoring what's happening up on stage. When we're shooting performance or when we're shooting documentary, how do we honor that process? And so, every single one of us, whether it's me kind of conceiving and setting up a lot of these kind of projects or writing and producing, occasionally directing them, or Matt Hoffman, who's my co-founder, who directs and edits a lot of these, or John Ford, who supervises how they get shot, that's always the question. What are you shooting it for? And how can we do something that's analogous to the experience of watching it in the theater?
Is it possible to recreate a theater experience on film? Because I ask because we've shot two DVDs of two of our productions, The Complete Works of William Shakespeare Abridged and The Complete History of America Abridged, shot by two different teams with two different sort of guiding principles. One was to capture the live experience that some people thought didn't play so well on television, and then one that played better on television, but perhaps didn't capture the live experience. So how do you walk that line?
A couple of different ways. One, and this is going to sound a little glib, but I think there's something to it. The majority of the stuff that we have done that involves live performing arts, not just theater, but dance and music as well, operates off this idea, which is that we agree that simply by shooting it and presenting it on a flat screen, and of course the idea here is always to be as empathic as possible towards those who are watching it, we are by definition taking away the dimension of depth. So we owe you a dimension back, which is time. And so the majority of those shows do things that only a video experience can do, using that dimension of time. In other words, we can show you a 5-month process in the course of an hour and a half, or we can take you to 7 different places in, you know, a minute's worth of time that you could never have done on your own. So that's one way of doing it, and that pieces like the Second City documentary we did is one of my favorite examples of that, where we started from the first day of rehearsal through opening night, just having felt like this cast that happened to be on stage at that time was going to be one of the, just was a great cast, and maybe something great was happening. And we turned out to be right, because that was Tina Fey and Scott Adsit and Rachel Dratch and Kevin Dorff and this Mick Napier directing this incredible show that turned into Paradigm Lost. So we could show that process, and we could you know, take you to the place where a scene idea happened, and then how it got played around in the played around with in an improv set, and then how it happened in the show. And so that was kind of us giving time back to the audience, having deprived them of depth. The larger question I think you're asking is, what do you do when it is just a full-out live performance? And that's tricky. I'm firmly of the belief, and this is someone who loves putting the arts on television, absolutely of the belief that there is nothing that replaces the live experience. And you can have 100 cameras shooting it in 3D. There's nothing that's like being being in the room when it's happening. So sometimes it's context, you know, where when PBS, for example, asks us to do a Pledge special or a, like we're doing a tribute to Kander and Ebb called First Your Dream, that's going to be in the Fall Arts Festival. And it's a live performance. It's a 1-hour live performance. So what do we do to make that the most exciting show possible? And I think there's things you can do when you think about, I don't know, how you get inside the moment of a performance, the exchange between performers. How do you try to shoot and edit in a way that kind of resembles how you might do it in the audience, because we're all kind of editing. We're choosing where to look in our heads. So how do you do that as opposed to just get coverage? And the context of the shoot is everything. When you get to shoot it for PBS, you have, in theory, you have the time and luxury to make that work and sound right. When you've got to go in and shoot in an hour a couple of clips from a Broadway show for any number of purposes, or when you don't even get to do that, when you just have to go in and shoot one live performance where you can't mic the actors, you know, then you're just kind of operating, you're doing the best you can and doing the most valiant uphill battle possible.
And you're coming in after the fact. I think any writer or director or creator of theater would write, direct, and conceive of the piece in a different way if it was meant to be filmed.
Yes. I think the only, you know, the people who seem to have cracked it the best, and we're trying to develop some things here in the States, in Chicago in particular, to emulate these models with a different bent on content. But when I look at what David Sable and his guys have done for the National Theater, NT Live does it great, I think. And part of the idea, there's a smart distribution model that there's a company out of New York called By Experience that our friends Robert and Julie Borchard-Young operate. And they're the ones who really have kind of perfected this distribution model of putting live theater in movie theaters. And now it feels live, and they create this, you know, it's because it's more appointment viewing, I guess. You know, you got to be there at whatever, 7 o'clock to go see Benedict Cumberbatch and Johnny Lee Miller and Young Frankenstein. And another cool thing they do is they don't fix any glitches. You know, if there's a crash zoom or someone's mic gets rustled or something, they always leave it in, so it always feels live. So that's part of it. How do you create an experience where you have that feeling like, oh boy, something could go wrong here, or something is going to happen here that might be different from any other experience, which, you know, I think that's part of the fun and the magic of being in theater. Like, this is the only time this moment's going to happen. However many times you guys have done your RSC shows, the one that you do tonight is the only time that show happens.
Hello, this is Andy White, Artistic Director of the Looking Glass Theater Company, and I want to thank you personally from the very, very bottom of my bottomless heart for listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? Our reduced 20-city UK tour of the show that started it all, The Complete Works of William Shakespeare Abridged Revised, continues this week and runs through July 10th. It'll be the last chance you'll have to see the RSC in the UK in this year of our Lord 2015. But we have 15 new US tour dates for this fall of 2015, performing in Pennsylvania, Georgia, Virginia, California, Louisiana, North Carolina, Missouri, and Kansas. And next April and May of 2016, we'll be performing the world premiere of our 10th stage show, William Shakespeare's long-lost first play, Abridged, at the Folger Shakespeare Theater in Washington, D.C.
So getting back to my original impulse for calling you, which is about talking about the Tonys specifically, it always amuses me when as actors and performers were invited to come to a fundraiser or something to perform a little something. And I always feel bad when we say, well, we could do the scene from this play. And they go, oh, you only act? Do you not sing? Do you not dance? Do you not do a magic trick? What is your value if you only act?
Lord.
I know. So what can the Tonys do, for instance? The Tonys are a commercial for theater, and that's fine. What can the Tonys do to make the plays look more interesting?
This is a really hard question. When you're taking cameras into a theater, I mean, there's kind of this real diametrically opposed lighting philosophy. Stage lighting is highly saturated and highly contrast, and it just makes cameras just scream and want to run home to their parents. So the Tonys face that, what they can actually mount in a given night. There was a time, as I recall, where they did scenes from plays, from Tony-nominated plays, up on stage live the way they do musicals. Honestly, right now, it feels to me very much like it's a commercial decision, what people think is going to maintain people's attention. And I think there's a general feeling, I don't personally agree with this, although I understand why they're doing what they're doing. But I think they just think that the plays won't translate as well on television and musical numbers will. I don't think that's always the case. I've seen lots of musical numbers that don't translate at all and certain plays that would have been mesmerizing. Mm. I think there are some decisions like that. What will most sell the Broadway product? And I don't mean that cynically. It's a big industry, and there's a lot they need to do to sell it. I think the what's interesting to me is if the Tonys are going to consistently counter-program against the NBA Finals, then their audience is probably more on the hardcore side than the general audience that they need to invite, in which case I would say play to that audience and show them a little bit of everything. Because there's some extraordinary theater that can happen only on Broadway with actors you'll only see on Broadway. And Entertainment Weekly was right to point out that footage is not that – it's. They didn't say it was hard to look at. They specifically called out that it's kind of hard – it's hard to listen to. Because, you know, you only have time. There's not a lot of – you can't mic the actors. So you don't – you hear this sort of more shouty, echoey – what sounds perfectly fine in the house sounds a little shouty and echoey on video. There's a few shows where we've actually been able to body mic the actors. And holy smokes, what a difference that makes. That's really a pleasure to shoot. And they're clips that still hold up and are great to watch and listen to. Audio's the big kicker. And if you can only put mics up, then that's good enough probably for some quick clips that the press reps need. But for broadcast, I agree. It can be kind of a mess.
Maybe we need to go back to the days when James Earl Jones and Angela Lansbury would do a scene from Driving Miss Daisy during the Tonys and then turn to the audience and go, and scene.
You know, personally, I would love it. Who wouldn't want to see that instead of, I mean, and again, we shoot a lot of these clips. I mean, the musicals are fine because everyone's mic'd and you get some really good audio and multiple opportunities to cut things together. We shoot these plays. We do it here in Chicago, too. I mean, we shoot a ton of, you know, most of the major and mid-sized theater companies are, you know, my team's working with. It's the same. It's really tricky. And I always say audio is the much bigger thing. If you had a single camera wide shot with great audio, I don't think people would probably find as much fault with that experience, you know, given the context they're watching it, versus three or four cameras, but the audio is not great. It's one of the things I think people overlook with all the, you know, especially theater companies and arts organizations when they're putting videos online. It's okay that you got a pretty decent camera at Best Buy, but don't use the camera mic because you're talking to your artistic director and now and it kind of sounds like that. And that makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah. And don't rely on, well, my classically trained voice will carry me over to the camera. I guess the good news is that this filming theater is becoming an emerging market, an emerging genre of its own, and with everybody sharing clips on social media, etc. And you are on the cutting edge, it seems like.
Well, I hope. I mean, and I appreciate that. We certainly love doing it, and I'm never happier than when I'm in a theater, unless maybe I'm in a, you know, in a meeting with my Looking Glass family or in an edit suite with my HMS pals. I mean, I just, any theater I'm in, I'm really, really happy. I think here's the tricky part, and I'm especially curious what you think of this, because you're on stage and you've dealt with so many different ways of having your work translated from a video and audio standpoint. One of the things I think people forget about is it's not just about finding the right show and finding the budget and putting cameras in there, but what is the reason we're doing it, and what do we want our audience's experience to be, and what do we want our relationship to be? It seems to me that the ones that are drawing people regularly are the ones where you have a relationship with a particular theater. And I guess a marketing person would say they have a relationship with the brand. But I guess I'm thinking about like the Met HD. There's you know, however many times, 15, 20 times a year you can do that. The NT Live broadcasts or the Cinecasts are... those are at least 12 or 15 a year, I think. And I know Stratford is doing them now with the Complete Shakespeare canon. I think it's about developing a relationship in the same way that we would have a relationship with the Purdue Shakespeare Company. What's the next thing RSC is doing? Oh, I want to go to that.
I think that's 100% right. You know, that we think about that when we're creating new shows. In fact, that's one of the reasons that our new show is a return to Shakespeare, is this idea of playing to our audience, you know, and playing to our quote unquote brand. And I think you want, I mean, I think for filmed purposes, you want to continue that relationship into a different medium. But also, inevitably, a film or filmed version can become a sort of calling card to the company for people who haven't had a chance to see it live.
Yes, absolutely.
And I guess the best filmed version of a theater piece, the best thing that can accomplish is make the viewer go, I need to see that play or that theater company live in the room.
I agree with you completely. And the job for us feels to be both a means and an ends. And it's I think what's helped inform this even more is some of the more arts advocacy work that I'm doing, because the idea for me is never just, let's make a really beautiful TV show out of, oh, I don't know, Second City's Guide to the Opera, when Patrick Stewart and Renee Fleming did that. Like, we shot that and it looks great and everything, but should that ever get seen anywhere else? My hope would be, okay, it's an ends in the sense of, that was a really entertaining 90 minutes. Second City was hilarious, and Renee Fleming was amazing. Patrick Stewart was incredible. I loved that experience. But I want it to be the means, which is to say, I need to go to a Second City show, or go to the opera, or go to theater. My favorite projects that we've done have been those that are deliberately set up that way. And I, you know, someone once said to me, like, is that actually honest documentary making? If you're doing something to make your subject, deliberately make your subject look good. And I kind of feel like, well, you know, there might be a point to that if there was, in fact, an anti-arts argument to make.
Well, and also that argument presupposes that a documentary must make something look bad.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your badly lit, poorly mic'd video via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on many of our website pages, and you could post reviews of this podcast on iTunes. You can interact with other fans at our website and a Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to Webmaster Matt Rippey, Gaffer Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Anna Lansfield. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Andy White, artistic director of the Tony Award-winning Looking Glass Theater Company in Chicago. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 445 1335ths of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
I don't think you need competition to make drama, nor do I think you need specific conflict, competitive conflict between people. Anybody who's trying to put on a good show is already, there's the drama. You're going to try to do something impossible, which is make the best show you've ever made and give the audience an experience they've never had before. We're all striving towards that impossible thing. And there, if you can't find drama in that, I don't think you should be telling stories on television through documentary.
And that can go on your website and your business cards. HMS Media, we're not TMZ.
God bless.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less. So much less. So much less. So much less.